in Hungary and when he testified before Congress. And he said, of course, no V without the oath. So under these terms of the organization, if he was trying to honor his father, he was dishonoring the rules of the organization that his father was honored by. I cannot read his mind. I was not in Hungary. But we then found three separate sources in the organization who said he did take the oath. He was initiated in the formal initiation ceremony into the organization.
So, Larry, if Gorka was a part of this organization and he didn't disclose it when he came to this country, he wasn't born in the United States, what does that mean?
It means that his status as an American citizen and as a legal immigrant could be undermined. I'm not an expert in immigration law, but in our reporting, we spoke to Bruce Einhorn, who was an immigration judge for 17 years. He now teaches immigration and nationality law at Pepperdine University. And perhaps most importantly for this unique situation, before that, he was deputy director of the Justice Department's Office on Special Investigations. This was the unit in the Justice Department charged with finding and deporting Nazis and members of other extremist groups who got into the United States by lying about or hiding their background. And he told us that someone who is asked, as you are asked, in these applications for immigration and citizenship about the organizations you joined, and you don't write it down, is vulnerable to a reversal of their legal immigration status or their citizenship status. He told us that there would be defenses for Gorka if he was prosecuted, but as a prosecutor with OSI for that many years, he said, this is a case that I would take up. It's a legitimate case, and it would be a challenging one, but it's a winnable one. So that is the state of the technical legal arguments involved, but they all spring from the fact that he was obligated, if he was a member, to disclose it at the time of his immigration and citizenship application.
Now, David Duke has defended Sebastian Gorka on Twitter, writing, quote, how is Sebastian Gorka a Nazi? The man is not only pro-Israel, he is also pro-Jewish. Strange time to be alive. They've truly lost it, David Duke wrote.
Yes. Well, there is a phenomenon that we have commented on in the forward where you have people who, because of the role Israel plays in the Middle East, and because of their bias against Muslims, they like Israel. And yet, domestically, they can be anti-Jewish. It is possible to be anti-Semitic and pro-Israel. It's a phenomenon that's emerged. I don't know if Gorka is that. As I said, we have never found that Gorka wrote anything anti-Semitic or anti-Jewish. What we found are these troubling associations. He said in his White House official statement that it was absurd and outrageous for anybody to say that he was anything other than opposed to anti-Semitism. I don't know how you define opposition to anti-Semitism, but partnering with a group like Vitesse Rand and with former members of the far-right anti-Semitic Jobbik Party would exclude many definitions of being opposed to anti-Semitism.
Larry Kolarasis, I want to thank you for being with us. Larry is the Forward's editor for Special Projects. We'll link to your piece, Exclusive Nazi Allied Group Claims Top Trump Aide Sebastian Gorka as Sworn Member. And that does it for our show. A very happy birthday to Ariel Boone. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Noreen Sheikh.
This is WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, our local news show here on WHFR.fm, the station making waves from Henry Ford College. Today is March the 17th, 2017. My name is Jay Koronick, station advisor here at WHFR FM in Dearborn. Happy to be with you today. Happy St. Patrick's Day to those that think it's a significant holiday. I think it's just a lot of blarney. Insert joke here. Okay. And certainly if you take part in a social tradition of getting blitzed out on alcohol as some sort of respect and honor to the holiday, that's pretty confused. We do have a commentary later that we might be able to get into from a health expert about the problem with binge drinking, even if you only do it every now and then. It's definitely a problem. There's problems with binge TV watching too, but that's not today's show. Okay, getting into some of the hard news. We organized the show in case you wondered. They never really organize anything. Yes, we try to start with the so-called hard and soft news stories coming from various local news sources. And then we proceed to updates from the state and local nonprofits. And then we try to conclude with some opinions that are expressed extremely well by some people in the media that we think are worthy. And let me just say at the outset, our usual qualification or disclaimer, if you will, all opinions on the show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College, staff, faculty, or students. But we thank them for our having freedom to express ours. And the reason that I do perspectives beyond the common ones and ideas, opinions beyond the usual ones that you'll see in the major media is because there's a lot of information out there, a lot of ideas out there. I try to present what I think is responsible and mostly true, okay, verifiable. And we try to give some balance, too, to the information. But we're very local, Dearborn and the surrounding areas, except when certain topics that affect Dearborn and the surrounding areas actually go beyond and are regional, national, and sometimes worldwide issues. All right. Let's start with some happy news that was in the paper, the Press and Guide last week. And let's see, the date on that is March 7th when it was put on the Press and Guide website. Dearborn has been ranked number 14 among overlooked dream cities by a financial website. Okay, my first comment is goodcall.com. They are the personal finance website here, and they do this for publicity for themselves, of course. But 14th most desirable, not just in Wayne County, not just in Michigan, but in all of the United States that people might want to move to. So 2017 overlooked dream cities, and they did rank it within the top 10% for its affordability, low crime. Well, 14th, is that top 10%? I don't know, I guess in terms of the final score that they came up with. Low crime, walkable neighborhoods, and plentiful amenities such as dining, entertainment, and recreation. A total of 461 small to mid-sized cities nationwide were evaluated by data analysts on the four areas. Now, this the criteria here is, of course, cities with fewer than 300,000 people that offer a well-rounded lifestyle. It's interesting that dominating the top list of cities are cities in the Northeast and Midwest. Something special about these areas, I guess. And the quote from the company that did this says, instead of moving to big cities, many people are looking for smaller, more affordable cities that still have fun things to do. Okay, the top 10 cities, just in case you asked, wanted to know. Number one, Erie, Pennsylvania. Yep. Wasn't there a kids TV show about Erie, Pennsylvania? And it was about ghosts and spooky things. But my colleague who's not with me today, John Conroy, WHFR news director, he's preparing again during the Lenten season to fry fish like crazy for his church in Gros Eel, and he has to start very early frying fish. Okay, that's it. But he's been in Erie, Pennsylvania, and he said to me a couple days ago that it's very nice. So there you are. Scranton, Pennsylvania is number 2. Parma, Ohio is number 3. Appleton, Wisconsin is number 4. Allentown, Pennsylvania, which I think is a song that, John Mellon, Cougar Mellencamp, also just John Mellencamp now, sang about, or was it Billy Joel? Anyway, it was like a steel town, and it was really tough living and so on. I guess things have changed in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Number 6, Racine, Wisconsin. Number 7, Grand Rapids, Michigan. They don't call it grand for nothing, I guess. Haven't been there in a while. It was starting a rebound the last time I was there about 10 years ago. I guess it's doing better now. Number 8, Cicero, Illinois. Didn't some great gangsters live there in the 20s? Something about gangsterism or the police or something was going on decades ago in Cicero. East Orange, New Jersey. Is that where Bruce Springsteen is from? Or some other place in New Jersey. Anyway, East Orange is considered a nice, safe little town. Number 9 on the list that was put together by this personal financial website company. Number 10, Green Bay, Wisconsin. We don't have the 11, 12, 13 that also beat out Dearborn, Michigan, but we are 14th out of 461 that had enough info. So that's a good story, positive story. There are a lot of great things about Dearborn, and we're going to have Mayor O'Reilly himself, John B. O'Reilly Jr., on this show for all our next week, our special radiothon edition of the new WHFR Journal. And he's going to be here to answer my questions, and he can answer yours too. If they don't happen to be mine, you can send your questions to us at whfr@hfcc.edu. And just put something about journal or questions for the mayor in the subject line of your email, and I'll be glad to try to get them in. Last year I had a list of about 100 or so questions about different issues in Dearborn, and I only covered 20. But we'll try to get the most important ones in, and if it'd be good if you could remind me of a few that you might have. Again, our email here for all communication with WHFR is whfr@hfcc.edu. But for this particular purpose for our show next Friday with Mayor O'Reilly, just put something in the subject line that will get it easily forwarded to me, like journal or questions for the mayor. Okay? An unfortunate story is also in the headlines, both at the Press and Guide and Arab American News in the last couple of days. Dearborn Councilman and his mother attacked after funeral service. Dearborn Councilman Mike Serini and his 66-year-old mother were attacked Monday night outside a funeral service after paying respects to a late friend and educator. Serini said that he and his mother were, quote, verbally harassed and physically assaulted by two disgruntled men, unquote, at about 7:30 p.m. This last Monday, outside the Islamic Institute of Knowledge, 6345 Schaefer Road in Dearborn. They had just attended a memorial service for former Fortson High School principal Imad Fadlala. The attackers are businessmen that Serini said he had dealt with as part of serving on the council. They had also attended the memorial service and allegedly gave Serini threatening looks inside. He declined to mention their names until possible charges are brought against them. The Dearborn Police are investigating the incident. It doesn't say in this article, he said that when he first met these people, these businessmen from this area at the consul, they had asked him to do him a favor, to do them a favor, something, maybe a regulation or rule or whatever, and he did, apparently. This is in the Arab American News story, not in the Press and Guide story. And in the Arab American News story, he said that they were disgruntled, that he wouldn't do something else for them, you know, as if, well, he's their inside man, and anything they want, he will do. And, of course, elected representatives, they don't just do what you tell them. They also have their own mind, and they also look at the bigger picture than what maybe one person sees. And in this more recent situation, apparently, with these two businessmen, quote-unquote, they didn't get their way. So that's what the threatening looks and then the threatening words were, and then physical assaulted somehow, whether it's pushing, shoving. Oh, here's the detail about that. By the way, Cerini did say that I made sure to exit the building to stay away from them, but they caught up to us at the car outside the Islamic Institute of Knowledge. His wife and mother, longtime Dearborn City Councilwoman Suzanne Cerini. Should have mentioned that up front, of course. So two council persons. You never stop being a council person, do you? Just like you're always given the title, even an honorary title. Barack Obama is still President Obama. Okay, it's an honorary continuation. Just like Governor Snyder, gasp, choke. I've got this vocal problem here. Will still be known as Governor Snyder even after he's not governor anymore. As an honor to the distinguished position. So, two council persons were attacked after the funeral service. Cerini himself was supposedly punched in the face, and his mother was hit with a water bottle after the men tried to get to her son through the car's, Mike Cerini himself, through the car's passenger side door. Suzanne Cerini also sustained bruises when the men tried to slam the door on her. Both are recovering from their injuries. And Cerini didn't want to give specific details about the men's grievances with him at the time. But he did state a little bit about the fact that they wanted special favors, or favors, if you will, but he, the second time around, he couldn't do that. Cerini said he will not give in to intimidation. His quote is, "I will not be pushed around or bullied in attempts to bend the law for anyone or anything. Personal favors are not the way I do city business." If you I can comment that if you have a special need for assistance from the city, if the city council is the right place to go, if you can't get help from one of the departments, then contact your council person, of course, and they'll see if there's something that's being done wrong by the city, perhaps, or an extension or a slight change that could be put into law for you, if that's appropriate. But maybe there's nothing they can do either sometimes. Going back to the story, when he became a councilman, Cerini said he was prepared to stand up for what's right and make tough decisions, but did not expect those decisions to jeopardize his loved one's safety. He says, "I am unwavering in my commitment to Dearborn and will continue to make decisions grounded in moral principle and strong ethics, even if it means taking a few punches to the face." That's completely, of course, in the opinion of yours truly, inappropriate, wrong in so many ways. I don't know where people get off thinking that that's appropriate behavior. They watch too many Hollywood movies. They listen to the Donald Trump as he was running for president, that don't like a protester, you should punch him in the face. That's what he said. Oh, he was just exaggerating. Yeah, but people started doing that at his rallies. Yeah. So, "No one believes in freedom of speech more than I do," he said at other points. And that's a terrible impersonation, if you thought it even was. But a lot of contradictions there. And luckily, I don't have to try to sort that out too much, except as it directly affects Dearborn on this show. But as I said, Dearborn police are investigating the incident. Our hopes for speedy recovery to Suzanne Cerini and also her son, Mike Cerini, are two of our council persons, one current and one retired. That's unfortunate. Okay, looking at other stories here. Let's go back to another good story, a fun story, because most of the other stories here are pretty tough. They're pretty important, but they're not a lot of fun. This was sweet. Couple gave up their generator to make sure that shelter animals didn't freeze during power outage. Here's the story from thenewsherald.com, it goes like this. Ray and Nancy Volmar of Brownstown Township owned an item they knew a lot of people would have paid top dollar for, but instead of selling it, they gave it away. The elderly couple had a practically new brand new generator, and Nancy Volmar said it was too difficult for them to handle. They had power at their house during the March 8th windstorm, but they were in the dark as to what was going on at animal shelters in the area and how they were getting along without power. And it raises a question. I hope our own animal shelter here in Dearborn, which is run by the Friends of Metro Detroit Animals, that's their official new name now, I wonder if they were okay. I hadn't even thought about them because my power was out for 4 days, as you heard about last Friday. I was only 2 days into it. A couple of years ago, this couple in Bronson Township donated the generator, lost power, and it was a struggle for them to keep their large animal-friendly family of cats and dogs warm. That following summer, they struggled to keep them cool when the sweltering heat reached temperatures over 100 degrees, and they lost power. Both occurrences prompted them to get a generator, and as Murphy's Law would have it, they've never needed to use it. So as block after block of houses and businesses downriver went dark during the infamous windstorm, the Vollmars were thinking about the animals. They heard of all the outages in Woodhaven, where about half of the city was out of power. Their goal became to put the word out that they had a 5,000-watt generator and would be willing to give it away to a shelter, soup kitchen, or warming center in need. The message reached Woodhaven Mayor Patricia Odette, who responded immediately. The two were Facebook friends. "She is wonderful," Nancy Vollmar said. "Members of the Department of Public Works picked it up within 30 minutes. They were very grateful to have it," unquote. She said she was glad the generator went someplace where it could be used to help pets, since she believes people often forget about them in times of crisis. I didn't forget about my pet. I took it with me to my alternate warm place. That was a priority for me. Knew I had to move for the sake of my cat. That's absolutely true. Why should pets suffer through things that we cause or that we don't take enough precautions about or become dependent on above ground service lines? I mean, sure, it's cheaper, and yeah, they only come down every now and then, not all the time. It shouldn't happen that way. All utilities, including internet, should be underground everywhere. And then big storms, wind storms, wouldn't be an issue. But it costs money to bury all that stuff. But if every new community would put rules in place to do that, and if there could be a plan to, over 50 years, to put utility lines, at least, we're talking about electricity, telephone lines, not as important. Obviously, cell phones work from cell phone towers, so you have to have the tower above ground, can't have it underground. It is wireless, but you need a telephone pole, or an actual aluminum tower to put the cell phone retransmission device on. So, very nice thing for them to do. By the way, a 5,000-watt generator is about $800, they said. Well, that was the value she gave to it. It is a year or two old, but they haven't used it much. So, I'm not saying everybody should buy a generator, these things help. So at least Bronson Township animals didn't get cold that were at the shelter down there. So thank you to the Vollmars of Bronson Township for that. Okay. Well, we've got several stories that I know they're national. It's obviously the President of the United States. I have this cough. I just have this. Get all choked up at times. His budget proposals, which are not law and can't be put into law until Congress does something about it, are pretty they're very cutting to a lot of the things that we expect and demand. And of course, the big issue is health care for a lot of people, Medicare, Medicaid, and insurance. For insurance costs are an issue for people, for the other people who aren't on Medicaid or Medicare. Here's commentary that we have for you from Jack Lessenberry about the coming healthcare disaster from MichiganRadio.org.
I'm Jack Lessenberry. As you almost certainly know, there's a Republican-backed bill before Congress that would repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, known to most people as Obamacare. I'm Jack Lessenberry. As you almost certainly know, there's a Republican-backed bill before Congress that would repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, known to most people as Obamacare. Republicans control both houses of Congress, and if they stay united on this, this bill should become law, perhaps within weeks. If that happens, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office estimates that within 9 years, the number of people without health insurance in this nation would grow by 24 million. That number is disputed by Speaker of the House Paul Ryan, who claims the bill would lower premiums, cut the federal deficit, and increase access to health care. But even he doesn't deny that some would lose coverage. What I've been wondering is what this would mean specifically to Michigan. So I checked in with the experts, and their conclusions are remarkably clear. If the Ryan plan passes in its present form, vast numbers will lose coverage, and some will die as a direct result. Charles Ballard is a professor of economics at Michigan State University who specialized for years in our state's economy. Professionally, he doesn't look at policies through an emotional filter, but by crunching and analyzing numbers. According to Ballard, those numbers show that across the country, thousands of people are alive today would be dead without the insurance coverage they've received through the Affordable Care Act. In an analysis he finished last weekend, he wrote that if Republicans succeed in passing this plan, tens, maybe hundreds of thousands in Michigan would lose coverage, and without any doubt, more and more would die needlessly. What's more, it would be extremely damaging for a state's economy. One of the most important parts of the Affordable Care Act was a provision allowing states to expand Medicare coverage to include families who are struggling, but slightly above the official federal poverty level. Some states refused on ideological grounds, even though Washington, until now, picked up the entire cost. States, in fact, will never pay more than 10%. Thanks to Governor Rick Snyder, Michigan signed up for the plan, and more than 600,000 people have health care who didn't before. Marianne Udall Phillips now heads the Center for Healthcare Research at the nonpartisan Michigan League for Public Policy. She estimates Medicaid expansion has created 30,000 new jobs every year in our state and generated $2.3 billion in additional spending power. And while this year Michigan will have to pay 5% of the cost of the program, she found that the expansion has increased sales tax receipts nearly enough to pay for itself. Her findings were echoed by a team of University of Michigan economists, medical professionals, and healthcare policy experts in an article last month in the New England Journal of Medicine. Led by Dr. John Ionian, director of the Institute for Healthcare Policy and Innovation, they found continuing the program would have clear economic benefits for Michigan for the foreseeable future. Professor Ballard told me that some taxes indeed would be rolled back under the GOP healthcare plan, but added that they're paid almost exclusively by people with very high incomes. What's going on here is crystal clear. The experts agree. I just wonder how many citizens are aware of the actual facts.
Jack Lessenberry is Michigan Radio's news analyst.
Yes, it is. And I don't know how that happens. Let me take a look at what's going on here. Okay. Oh, I see. Okay. We're getting some spurious spots playing, as we call them. Pre-recorded announcements. So thanks to Michigan Public Radio. Here's a specific story about people in Nashville, Tennessee, a particular group called Physicians for a National Health Program, PNHP, National Health Physicians for a National Healthcare Program. And that would either be, these days there's two of them being talked about, which would actually accomplish what Donald Trump said during his campaign. Everybody would be covered. It would be simple and straightforward, and cost will go down. There's only two ways to do that. Only two ways in the whole wide world. He had some magic plan he didn't tell us about. And he still doesn't tell us about it if he has it, because the proposal that came out this week is not it. Because people would be kicked off up to 24 million in just 9 more years or 8 years. Listen to democracynow.org on the website, not our website, on their website, listen again to what Ralph Nader says. Ralph Nader, the smartest man in politics. He's 82 years young, and he always is up to date and full of documented, verifiable information. Always listen to Ralph Nader. That's my humble opinion, of course. Well, Dr. Carol Paris was part of the demonstration. She's president of the Physicians for National Healthcare Program, and she confronted Donald Trump, President Donald Trump, during his Wednesday evening rally in Nashville, Tennessee, 2 days ago, giving a voice to the thousands who protested outside the evening appearance of Donald Trump in Nashville and the millions more poised to lose their health care. Dr. Carol Paris demanded that he do better by the American people, cutting off Trump's speech as he lauded his administration's efforts to roll back crucial health and environmental regulations. Paris, which doesn't make any sense to yours truly, but Paris, president of the Physicians for National Healthcare Program, held up a sign that read, "Improved Medicare for All." And also their group started chanting, "Put your name on a plan that works, Medicare for All." That would be the easiest way to adopt healthcare for all in the United States. You simply give Medicare coverage to everyone, man, woman, and children, all ages, races, creeds, genders. Okay? Now, the other plan, which there's a couple of variations of internationally, is called universal single-payer healthcare. That avoids some of the extra costs. For example, I'm on Medicare. Being of just 1 year older than the President of the United States. And the problem is I still have to put out money, hundreds of dollars a month. For some people, it's thousands, but because I'm a retired teacher in Michigan, there's a slight discount. But it's a gap plan, It's between Part A and Part C or something of Medicare. So if I want just slightly more coverage than what Medicare will give me, and it will cover the gaps in coverage that Medicare has, then we have to pay more money. But it's not too bad. Okay. Universal single payer, you pay no money for health care. Okay, unless you want something very special. I mean, the Canadian system of universal single payer is very good. It's a little different than the French program, which is also very good, probably the best in the world. But French program is universal single payer. Germany has a plan. England has a plan. They're all very good, more efficient, simpler, covering everybody. Healthcare is a right. Healthcare is a right. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And if you don't have life that is a healthy life, you can't have liberty and you can't very easily pursue happiness. That's my opinion. Okay, what do you think? It is a terrible example to live. I mean, it's just terrible to live next to a country that is doing health care well, right across our river. And we're not. And we're supposedly the best country in the world. Yeah, well, we don't care about the poor, I guess. We don't care about the middle classes. And of course, the story, by the way, if you want to read all of it about Dr. Carol Paris and the Physicians for National Healthcare Program, simply go to commondreams.org. You can get daily selection of a variety of news from a variety of news sources that are verifiable, a variety of opinions too. You can get that sent to your email address for free every day, as I do. Sometimes I give stories from it, but it's just very stimulating. And by the way, Ralph Nader's commentaries are almost always on commondreams.org. Also, he has his own website though too, of course. Healthcare is a big issue, and it could be done better. I will say that, even though Medicare will allow you to basically use a wide number of different doctors, there are some things about the actual medical profession, as well as big pharma in America, that have to change, that have to be more health-oriented, more pro-health-oriented. There is a lot of things that approaches to healthcare that still are not being implemented or even being allowed by some of these medical insurance plans, and that's unfortunate. Let's move on here. The new WHFR Journal. Just backtracking slightly, you might say, oh, a principal died? I didn't read about that. Well, it was unfortunate, but the former Fortson principal, Ahmad Fadlala, he had been principal at Fortson High School in Dearborn from 2005 until his retirement in 2010. And Trustee Mary Lane at the Board of Education Monday night meeting this week said that, and it was an odd meeting because they had trouble with power, but Trustee Mary Lane said Fadlala was much maligned. She went on to say, quote, in the period after 9/11, he stood up for this community. He opened his doors and showed people what it means to be an Arab American with a breaking voice. So she had a lot of emotion going. She praised Fadlala's commitment to students and the community. He was courageous, she said. It's not just enough to be the good side. To be the good side, sometimes we need someone to denounce the bad things. She also said that some of the criticism Fadlala received was for following directions given by the superintendent or the school board. Dearborn Public Schools was twice sued over Fadlala's tenure at Fortson. In both, former staff claimed that he discriminated against non-Muslim, non-Arabic staff at the school and ultimately caused the two teachers and one coach involved in the lawsuits to lose their jobs. Trustees had a moment of silence for Fadlala and the two other staff members who died recently. So that was the memorial service that the Serenis were at, and that afterwards they were accosted. Some of the schools, by the way, did River Oaks Elementary, Etzel Ford High School, and the Administrative Service Center were all still closed Monday due to power outages. Those particular schools reopened on Tuesday. Etzel Ford and the Administrative Service Center had power restored Monday morning, but then it blinked out again just before 8 p.m. Monday, throwing the board meeting room into darkness. After a short recess, the board opted to reconvene to hear from speakers who were present and approve official items. Initially, the meeting proceeded lit entirely by cell phones and small flashlights. A few emergency fog lights were added to finish the remainder of the meeting. Must have been very dramatic. Malaiko said that earlier in the day, he and his administrative team were meeting at nearby Snow Elementary School, which did have power. Now, Etzel Ford's status for Tuesday was uncertain as the board went home for the night shortly before 9 p.m., so I don't have a report on that, but it did take a while. At one point, almost half of the district, 15 of 31 buildings, did not have power, which was sort of like Dearborn, almost half of the residences last Thursday. And then it got worse, too, because even though DTE was repairing some, there were more trees, more damage to the power lines, and neighborhoods like mine Thursday night went out. More than 500 people in my area in particular. So, and we talked about that there was still power outages, power going down even after the repairs started as late as last Friday. Of course, Trustee Hussein Berry applauded administrators for staying on top of the issues and keeping the board and public informed. All right, let's see here. Well, okay, let's have a comment from Jim Hightower. Last week I couldn't bring in any spots because I didn't have access to a computer before I got to the station, although the college had power. Here's commentary from Jim Hightower. Now, I know this is pretty direct for all of those of you that happen to be supporters of and love everything that the current president has to say. Jim Hightower, who is not a physician, has a comment about his about the seeming mental health problem. And I, you know, you'll have to look up the definitions for yourself, but here's Jim Hightower's always spirited and challenging commentary.
It's time to state the obvious. The President of the United States is deranged. I don't mean he's merely idiosyncratic, nor do I say this as a political jab. I mean that Donald J. Trump literally is mentally ill. Okay, I'm no doctor, but you don't need a doctorate in mental disorders to see that his behavior in public and on Twitter is beyond abnormal. It's psychotic. As we've seen, he routinely plunges into prolonged fits of petty paranoia. He succumbs to delusions of imperialist grandeur. He spouts ridiculous right-wing rumors as facts and denies that actual facts are true. And he is pathologically addicted to lying, bizarrely repeating his most blatant fabrications even after they've been totally debunked. A sane, temperamentally balanced president, possessing all the power and majesty that America's supreme office conveys, doesn't get into demeaning public snits with the likes of Arnold Schwarzenegger, doesn't feel a constant need to puff himself up with ridiculously false claims, such as his frantic insistence that the crowd at his inaugural celebration was the largest ever, doesn't rage rabidly at media outlets that displease him, blasting them as enemies of the people, and does not unleash a furious all-out attack on Barack Obama just because some radio talk show screwball made a proof-free claim that the former president had wiretapped Trump's campaign. This is Jim Hightower saying, these are not mere eccentricities, not just Trump being Trump. It's obvious that the guy is not well and is unable to handle the stress of being president. Indeed, his flaky behavior suggests he's on the brink of a personal breakdown, and his ever more frequent retreats to his posh Florida golf resort tells us he doesn't even want to do the job. His loved ones and his party should intervene for his sake and for America's, but they won't. So, will we?
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Those are pretty strong words, of course, about a president of the United States. But by the examples that he gave, I have to say that, you know, there's something to those, the application of those definitions of a mental illness. And, of course, you have to make the decision on how you feel and how you relate to that. What do you do with someone who is, here I go again, president of the United States and has all of these negative attributes? Seriously. I mean, who should be the most reasonable, the most objective person in the United States of America? I'd say it should be the President of the United States. Also, the most compassionate, the most understanding, the most open to all ideas and all the people. These words, I think, deserve to be said. Jim Hightower said them, not myself. But think about them and see how you want to respond. Speaking of responding, okay. We have a couple of call to actions this weekend. One is our WHFR Radiothon 2017. Once a year, we have a one-week-long pledge drive over the air where we ask for your pledge of support, financial support, for what we're doing here. Alternative news, but not alternative facts. Just so you're clear on that. Okay? And a lot of different opinions. I think we do that great. By the way, coming up at 2 o'clock from 2 to 4 today, Kitty Love, our blues DJ of Highway 61, has chosen to start the pledge drive early. This is kind of a tradition that Joanne Kurczynska, who was our blues DJ here on Friday afternoons for 25 years before she passed away early in January of 2016, and we miss her greatly, but just a sort of a Radiothon 2017 preview will be happening today from 2 to 4 p.m. So we'll fill you in about that. I have a little information about that too. One of our catchphrases this year, you know, we always have to have a theme or a phrase, is the phrase call to action. And that's because our phone system is giving us problems. It gave me a problem during my show last week. It's hard to dial out. It's hard to take phone calls in. We still have to use it for your calls, but we're going to issue a special phone number. So because we're having trouble with even the digital switching of the signals to get to us. We need special broadcast quality equipment that is very expensive. In fact, the total package we're needing to replace after more than 20 years will come to over $8,000. Now, we have plenty of other bills to pay, $14,000 for satellite service and the classical music overnight and six different programs we get syndicated from Public Radio International and National Public Radio Services. Over $5,000 in copyright fees for the music we play and stream over the internet. There's no way to do this without money coming in from primarily our listeners. 60-70% of our budget comes directly from our listeners. We have a small stipend from Henry Ford College, which has remained pretty much the same over the last 32 years. It's not enough. It's not enough to live on, and that's the way it should be. If we're not good enough to get your support, then, well, I guess we don't deserve to be on the air. But we're a unique, independent, non-commercial resource, and I'll tell you more about that later. But the other call to action for this weekend, very interesting, is there's somebody at our door, and Kitty Love is going to greet him, see what he wants to know. Oh, he got in the door. How did that happen? The door wasn't latched. Ooh, that's another thing. Our electronic doors have to be replaced. Okay. The other call to action is actually happening tomorrow morning. It's actually a call to action from a League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights. And the public is invited. Everybody who can make it to what they're calling Public Action 101. That's like a basic introductory course, basic information, you know, if it was a college class. But it's a non-credit sort of thing. It's just 2 hours tomorrow morning from 10 a.m. to 12 noon at Christ Episcopal Church at the Fellowship Hall that's in the basement at 120 North Military in Dearborn. So Christ Episcopal Church, 120 North Military in Dearborn. They're going to try to show you how to turn your energy into effective political and social action. So the topic's very simple, how to most effectively influence elected officials. And a lot of elected officials have been invited to actually be there from the area. And I did learn confirmation that Mayor O'Reilly himself will be there tomorrow morning from 10 to noon. But also how working with groups and coalitions can make your message more effective. Like being part of the League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights, but there's many other groups, so other community groups are also invited to attend. This is free, okay? And they want to stress that we are more effective if we work together, and your elected officials need to hear from you. And the whole range of topics, of course, immigration, refugees, Islamophobia, racism, oil pipelines, water safety, it goes on and on. So, again, the League of Women Voters was founded in 1920 to encourage active and informed participation in government. We do not support or oppose political parties or candidates. They do, however, take positions on some issues, and they did take a position. Okay, where is it? Here it is, reaching across the desk, off mic, as they say. About the one story we did last week after the emergency story issues, and that was a very interesting, amazing story, I thought, because it was a group of residents, mostly people who lived around the golf course owned by Wayne County, a public golf course, and there's a proposal that Wayne County wants to sell it to collect money for their budget, which is... Well, all city and state and county budgets are in trouble, but and these people didn't want it to happen. So about 300 people came out to the meeting and pretty clearly registered their displeasure, their disapproval of the plan going forward. So the League of Women Voters actually took a stand on this issue, and they're against the sale And one reason is once you sell it to private people, you never get it back for the public use. You lose that potential resource, that space forever. And so they did take that position. They told people contact the Wayne County Commission, especially the chair, Gary Warrenchuk, who was from the Dearborn Allen Park area. I mean, he represents that area. It seems like there's not going to be a vote expected on that for a few weeks. I think they want the issue to settle down a little bit before they do a vote. Maybe people will forget it and they don't have to be criticized when they vote for it. I don't know what the reason was for delaying it, but he has contacted president of League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights, Betsy Cushman, that no vote will be taken yesterday's meeting, and no vote is expected for a few weeks, and that he will contact Betsy if that schedule changes. Don't contact, however you feel on this issue, don't contact any other commissioners about this issue other than Gary Warrenchuk. Okay, that's the first thing that the league wants you to know. All righty. Okay, 10 minutes to go here before Highway 61 and the special Radiothon 2017 preview, when you could actually call in your pledge. You could talk to Kitty Love or yours truly, because I'm going to stay here as soon as I get something to drink and lubricate my throat from 2 to 4 today. So we've got all kinds of pledge incentives. We've got special incentives from the Blues Show for your donations and pledges, and we'll give you just the full information. And I wish I didn't have to do it all by myself here, there was a press release on Wednesday, March 8th, 9 days ago. And this story about our Radiothon and our need for funding again this year, every year, didn't get in either the Times Herald this last Wednesday or the Press and Guide from this last Wednesday, much less last Sunday. Now, maybe they'll have something in the Press and Guide this Sunday, which would be very nice, because that is the official day that our pledge drive starts. It's from Sunday, March 19th, all the way through to the following Saturday, March 25th, and all kinds of things going on. The story does indicate there will be live concerts on the air. There'll be a special blues benefit at New Place Lounge on the 25th. There is, some of the live concerts, for example, every day Sunday on from 5 to 6 p.m., we'll have live bands in our Studio J, which is adjacent to our broadcast Studio A. And they will be actually performing live from 5 to 6 p.m. every day. And that will be blues rock of Detroit, the blues rock music of the group called Detroit Trouble, who will also be at the New Place Lounge. And that'll be Monday on the Big Dog Show. R.J. Spangler himself, one of the great blues and jazz artists in the Detroit area, and helped to produce and manage all kinds of talent in Detroit for decades, as well as being a president, former president of and supporter of the Detroit Blues Society. He's going to be performing jazz on the Jazz Montage Show this coming Tuesday from 5 to 6. There's going to be death metal groups, punk rock groups, and all through the week from 5 to 6 o'clock starting next Sunday. The news article that didn't get in the papers. We're also going to have a CD and merchandise sales table this coming Tuesday in the atrium, also known as a lobby, of the Mackenzie Fine Arts Center, which is Building F. That's the only time it really worked here, folks. The re-lettering of all of our buildings, F standing for Fine Arts. Isn't that great? Anyway, that'll be Tuesday from 10:30 in the morning to 2:30 in the afternoon. Then we're going to do it again the following Tuesday here in the Student Center, but I won't mention that right now. And of course, you can come on campus All CDs and albums are a dollar each. These are used CDs and albums from WHFR's massive collection, all different kinds, as well as WHFR logo items. We don't have our Radiothon t-shirts in yet, but you could give us an order for one, fill out a form, and we'll get one of the new ones to you at that event. Or just call us today, just starting in a few minutes, at our special phone number that Kitty Love will tell you about when Highway 61 special preview, Radiothon 2017 preview today for 2 hours only from 2 to 4 o'clock. As I said, next Friday, the Mayor O'Reilly will be on this show, the new WHFR Journal, for a whole hour answering my questions. And I got a lot of questions, oh boy. And then, of course, there's the Radiothon Party and Benefit Concert at New Place Lounge in West Dearborn on Michigan Avenue from 9 p.m. to midnight next Saturday, March 25th. As it says here, every year WHFR uses the money it raises for essentials and basic needs. Our goal this year is to replace our studio broadcast telephone system and invest in a new remote unit for broadcasting outside the studio and in the community. And we want to have the best quality and be able to get the phone lines open to as many as possible and make it sound as good as possible for all of you, our loyal listeners. And 32 years, still going strong, thanks to your support. A couple of the things here. Before we move ahead and move out for Highway 61 to come in. There's a very nice a cappella concert. You know what that is? A cappella means no instruments other than the human voice, which is another kind of instrument. So just all vocal concert, and it's going to be happening this Sunday, March 19th, from 4 to 7 p.m. at Cherry Hill Presbyterian Church. The concert will feature a mass in G minor. Rolf Vaughan Williams composed that, as well as the Vanguard Male Chorus and Brass Quartet under the direction of Henry Ford College Professor G. Kevin Dewey. So it's going to be good if G. Kevin Dewey is involved. And there'll be additional works performed by Bartholomew Buller, Bird, Duncan, Harston, Lesring, and Nelson, and also brass pieces by Bach and Gabrielli. General admission for that is $15 at the door. Tickets are $13 in advance. Students receive admission for only $6. Apparently, you can get more information at DearbornTheater.com, but it's not going to be at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. This is sponsored by the Dearborn Recreation and Parks Department, but it sounds like you might be able to pick up tickets or reserve them in advance by going to the website Dearborn Theater, that's TER.com. A cappella concert, it sounds like a great classical music program of all different kinds of composers and great performances. I am certain of it. That's Sunday, this March 19th. This weekend from 4 to 7 p.m. at Cherry Hill Presbyterian Church. Okay, what else? Okay, just have time enough, I think, for one opinion or two here. One that's in the Metro Times this week, I don't have time to go over all of it, but Jack Lessenberry, he does podcasts, yes, for Michigan Radio, but then he also has this column every week in the Detroit Metro Times, which you can see at metrotimes.com or pick up a free copy of Metro Times various places around the city. But he indicates in this three-page editorial here, opinion, that the agony continues in Flint, Michigan. So the water problems, health issues are still continuing. And so he, you know, you should read about that and document that, is that we still got a lot more to do. And nobody's doing it, I guess. Sad, to coin a phrase. One of the things that the budget proposes from President Trump is to eliminate funding besides the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, which I think is one of the best cabinet-level departments of the United States of America. Why? Because No state, no city, no, all by themselves can come up with the right regulations, consistent quality regulations for preserving clean air, clean food, clean water across the whole United States. I mean, it's got to be a federal agency, and you've got to give them power. You've got to give them support. And, of course, the president's budget proposes to basically cut it out. And the person in charge of it, who has been appointed to it now, wants to eliminate it. Right. Because, well, we would all just get together ourselves and clean up the water in Lake Erie, right, if there was a problem. I mean, we'd just go out there and take a cup of water and filter it in a little water bottle or a Brita canister and then pour it back in. And if everybody did that, Lake Erie would still have a problem. And you know everybody won't do that. But one of the other ideas is that National Public Radio and Public Broadcasting, which is under the Public Broadcasting Corporation Act from the late 60s, that provides from 7 to 10% of the funding for all these public radio and public television stations in the U.S. And they're proposing, of course, to cut it out completely. And why is it unique? Because it's the best objective news available in the United States of America. That's the first way it's unique. And it has, of course, entertaining programming that's very unique, too. So there is a company, now I should say, starting our pledge drive in just a few moments, that WHFR is not supported by that funding. We get no money from the federal government, from the state government, from Dearborn. It's up to you folks to give us over 60% of our budget for each year in order to pay our bills to keep going with the great kinds of programming that we have available for you, and news and information too. Cost money. The paper, just for me to print out all the stories I bring in. I go through a lot of paper every week, and there's no other way to do it, folks. I can't access all these stories that quickly on the computer. No. There is an organization, if you're concerned about protecting public media, that is the National Public Radio, the Public Broadcasting Corporation that helps TV and radio, join up, check out the website of protectmypublicmedia.org. Got that? protectmypublicmedia.org, and you can fill out a petition there that they'll send along, and maybe you want to support that effort. I think it's a very noble cause. I do personally also support, I give money to WDET in Detroit, as well as MichiganRadio.org in Michigan for all of their networked stories and information. They actually have reporters in Lansing, like almost no other media outlet has anymore. I always like to know what they're doing in Lansing. Usually not much, but it's always good to know. All right, that's all we have time for now. Stay tuned for a special edition of a Radiothon preview edition of Highway 61. This is Jay Kornick saying goodbye for now. And stay tuned for all of our Radiothon 2017 programming starting officially on Sunday, but coming up right now.